Iconic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. Undoubtedly, you've noticed that cell phones are becoming ubiquitous in our culture. Over 3 billion of the things have been manufactured around the world, and they seem to be getting more powerful every day. In fact, many cell phones, the iPhone currently being the most famous, not only allows users to make phone calls, but also to take photos, store a person's complete address book and contact list, make personal notes, surf the internet, download and store data from a computer, and even keep expense and financial records, including things like PIN numbers for ATM machines and passwords for online bank or other financial transactions. These new devices literally allow people to keep their lives, or at least their lives in information form, in their pockets. Very handy, very convenient, and maybe very dangerous. Let's leave aside for a moment the possibility that a savvy thief will grab someone's iPhone and rummage through it looking for bank or brokerage information and passwords. In that case, at least the owner will know what happened and be able to call and alert the bank to freeze his or her account. But suppose you're stopped for going through a stop sign, or not wearing your seatbelt, and you wind up getting arrested, which, according to Supreme Court decisions, could happen. What might happen next? This question is starting to attract the attention of legal scholars, because, quite simply, our laws are behind our technology in many ways, and the consequences of that lag could be very serious for us as individuals when faced with the power of government. Consider the following scenario taken from an article called, quote, "The iPhone Meets the Fourth Amendment," end quote, by law school professor Adam Gershowitz. Quote, "Imagine that Dan defendant is stopped by the police for driving through a stop sign. The officer thinks that Dan looks suspicious, but has no probable cause to believe he's done anything illegal, other than driving recklessly. Nevertheless, because running a stop sign is an arrestable offense, and the officer is suspicious that Dan might be involved in more serious criminal activity, the officer arrests Dan for the traffic violation. Under the search incident to arrest doctrine, officers are entitled to search the body of a person they're arresting to ensure that he does not have weapons or will not destroy any evidence. The search incident to an arrest is automatic and allows officers to open containers on the person, even if there's no probable cause to believe there's anything illegal inside of those containers. For instance, a standard search incident to arrest often turns up drugs located in small containers, such as a cigarette pack. Yet, Dan does not have a cigarette pack in his pocket. Instead, like millions of other technophiles, Dan is carrying an iPhone. The officer removes the iPhone from Dan's pocket and begins to rummage through Dan's cell phone contacts, call history, emails, pictures, movies, and perhaps most significantly, the browsing history from his use of the internet. In addition to finding Dan's personal financial data and embarrassing personal information, the police also discover incriminating pictures of stolen contraband, emails evidencing drug transactions, and internet surfing of websites containing child pornography. Is all of this evidence admissible, even though Dan has only been arrested for a traffic infraction, and there was no probable cause, not to mention no warrant, to search the contents of his iPhone? When one considers the breadth of information located in Dan's iPhone, it would seem shocking that officers need no suspicion whatsoever in order to search through that information. Yet that conclusion appears to follow from long-standing Supreme Court precedent laid down well before handheld technology was even contemplated. End quote. Not a very pretty picture if you carry a lot of information on your cell phone or other personal digital device. Most folks won't have anything as overtly criminal as photos of stolen property on their cell phones, but there are plenty of other things that are not strictly illegal, but which we would not want others to know about, like that sexy emailed Valentine from a lover, when someone already has a spouse. And the plain sight exemption extends the officer's ability to search even further in many cases. Suppose that poor Dan has the remnants of a marijuana cigarette sitting in the car where it's in plain sight. That pretty much gives the officer the right to search all of Dan's car. Suppose Dan has his laptop in the back seat, and the officer decides to look through its contents. Heaven knows what might be on the laptop. So here's the question. Should police have the right, as a matter of course, to search electronic devices such as cell phones or laptops in the course of a traffic stop or other routine infraction of the law when there is no other probable cause involved? Should there be any guidelines or limitations on such searches? What about at the border, an area that some legal scholars refer to as, quote, a privacy-free zone, which anyone who's ever been strip-searched in an airport or border crossing can attest to? And what if you have your cell phone or the hard drive on your laptop encrypted? Should police have the power to compel you to give them the password so they can search that electronic device? In Great Britain, the answer is clear. In that bastion of democracy, whose traditions we so often follow in law here, you can get 5 years in the clink for refusing to hand over the password of your encrypted hard drive if the proper authority orders you to do so. That is not yet the case in the U.S., but there are already cases in court that raise that very question. These are big questions, and largely still unresolved. That's why articles with titles like Searches and Seizures in a Digital World are showing up in places like the Harvard Law Review. It's also why people who carry cell phones or other portable electronic devices with a lot of personal information on them might want to think over exactly how much of their lives they want to carry in their pockets, while physical space law is still all we have to apply to an increasingly cyberspace world. We'll keep helping you to think over such questions as we all try to find our way every day in a world that is increasingly a merger of the physical and the digital domains, right here on future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.